So that's the notion of gospel as a powerful word. You have to get used to that notion to understand why Luther's gospel works the way it is, why it's not our technique, why it's not merely a doctrine that you have to apply to your life. It's God speaking. It's God doing something. Luther works out this doctrine of the gospel in its deepest and most systematic way for the first time in 1520 in The Freedom of a Christian. There's a number of things that happen earlier, and I'm going to talk about the first time he talks about the gospel as a promise. But the first time you get a full-orbed, full-fledged sort of systematic theology based on this notion of gospel and the contrast between gospel and law is in 1520 in this lovely treatise called The Freedom of a Christian. It's one of the favorite Lutheran treatises, and there's good reasons for that. It's lovely and beautiful in all sorts of ways. Let me tell you about the first half of The Freedom of a Christian. We'll talk about the second half of it next lecture. The first half is all about the gospel, all about faith. So, Luther compares faith in the gospel to a wedding. He compares it to taking hold of your bridegroom. I'm going to sort of fill out this picture just a little bit from some other of Luther's writings because I think there's a whole set of systematic metaphors here. I suggested the gospel is like a wedding vow, right? It's a promise which effectually gives you another person who is your beloved. Well, Luther compares this to a king who gives his son in marriage to a prostitute. We're the prostitutes, folks, all of us, right? But we become the bride of Christ. The prostitute becomes the bride of the king's son. So that changes who she is. She gets married, she gets cleaned up, she gets dressed in gorgeous, glorious robes, and she gets all the wealth of the king's son, which it turns out it's her job then to distribute to everyone else, right? She gets saved and cleaned up so that she can help everyone else. That's where good works come in, which we'll talk about later. But think first of all now about the transformation. We are this prostitute. She hears this wedding vow, and she believes it, which means she no longer believes she's a prostitute. We don't have a right to believe anymore that we're sinners, because this beloved, this son of the king, says, "You are my beloved, and I am yours." That's the wedding vow. It comes from the Song of Solomon. You are my beloved. You are my beloved, and I am yours. You're supposed to believe that, which means you're supposed to believe you're no longer a prostitute anymore. You're a queen. You're royalty. You're glorious. Right? You're not supposed to believe in the old self, the old sinner. You have received Christ. You are now the king's beloved, his son's bride. That means, of course, also in receiving nothing less than the son of the king himself, which of course means nothing less than God in the flesh, you have received also not only all that he is, but all that he has. You receive righteousness, justice, sanctification, holiness, blessedness, all that other stuff. You know, big long words, justification, right? That comes second. That's like, you know, you marry the king's son, you get his wealth. But why would you want to marry him for his wealth? He's much better than all the riches of the world. If you're a prostitute, you might have to learn a little bit about that, right? Loving someone for themselves. But after all, the king's son is glorious and wonderful, and we get used to the idea that having God is better than having anything that God has. You don't go to heaven in order to get some kind of giant cookie or something. You go to heaven so you have God, right? The very best thing. Who cares about this other stuff? Justification, righteousness, sanctification. That all comes along, but that's not what it's all about. It's all about God. It's all about Christ. The other side of the coin, after getting all that belongs to the king's son, so that you have not only Christ but all that is his, the other side of it is that all that is his becomes yours. No, I'm sorry, that's the first side. Pardon me? First side. All that is his becomes ours. The other side is all that is ours becomes his. There's a blessed exchange, Luther calls it. What is his becomes ours. What is ours becomes his. And what is ours? Sin, death, the devil, suffering, the cross. So that's why he's on the cross, is because he bears all that is ours, our sin and death. That's the blessed exchange. We get what's his. He gets what's ours. It's like the prostitute gets all the wealth of the kingdom and the king's son takes on all her debts and wounds and sufferings and anguish. And on the cross, one other thing that happens, in addition to this blessed exchange, is what Luther calls a mighty duel. Luther loves battles, right?